Welcome to the Water Tower Hour podcast. I am your host, Tim Regan, Chief Revenue Officer at Water Tower Research. In today's episode, we're going to talk about a company we have discussed in the past called Aspira Women's Health, Inc., which is a bioanalytical-based women's health company focused on the development of gynecological disease diagnostic tools. The stock trades on the NASDAQ under the ticker AWH. You can learn more about the company at aspirawh.com. You can also find our coverage of the company on watertowerresearch.com. Click on the Companies tab and scroll down to Aspira Women's Health. As always, our research content is open access and freely available to all investors. Dive into the company today. I have two guests. First, my new co-host and vice chair and co-founder of Water Tower Research, Tim Gerderman. Tim, great to finally have you co-host with me, and thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tim. Happy to join you both today.
Thanks. And more importantly, we have Nicole Stanford, CEO, president, and director of Aspira. Nicole, great to have you back, and we appreciate you being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
Of course. So I think probably a good place to start is just to remind the audience of your background, and would you mind telling us a little bit more about AWH and your current product offering?
Sure. Yeah, so my history with Aspira actually started as an investor. I spent most of my career prior to Aspira with Deloitte, almost 30 years. Had a lot of different jobs while I was there, different roles. I found that I actually had a knack for starting new businesses and turning around other businesses, growing businesses. I really loved that. So as my career went on, I did continue my client work, but I also became a little bit of a business leader and an expert in turnarounds of the firm. So when I left in about 2019, I had already started to buy stock in Aspira. I was on a panel with the prior CEO at Yale, and the topic was resilience. And you know, part of the reason why I'm so connected to the mission of the company is, you know, I was talking about resilience in the context of surviving a health challenge without completely blowing up your career. I'm a breast cancer survivor, discussion around resilience from that perspective was complemented by Valerie Palmieri, who was the prior CEO of Aspira, talking about this blood test for ovarian cancer. And candidly, I didn't really think that that was accurate. I didn't believe that that was a real thing. So after that conference, I went back and started reading about the company, reading about the science, and as both a breast cancer survivor, a mother of two daughters, but also I lost my grandmother to ovarian cancer many, many years ago. So, you know, I decided that, you know, this is a test that really needs to, you know, be the standard of care. And I just believe completely that someday, very soon, it will be the standard of care. So I bought the stock. Then was invited to join the board, served as the audit committee chair for a year. And then when Valerie decided to retire, I stepped in as the CEO. So that was back in 2022. So I've been the CEO for just over 2 years. So Aspira, as I alluded to just a minute ago in my intro, Aspira has a non-invasive test. It's actually a very simple blood test. It's a combination of blood tests, actually. We have a whole suite of offerings around risk assessment for ovarian cancer. Essentially, if a woman has a pelvic mass and adnexal mass, their clinician can order the test and it will provide a risk score, giving them insight as to the likelihood that that mass is in fact ovarian cancer. Our first test is for surgical triage, so it'll give a risk score, and then that will decide who will do a surgery to remove the mass. Very important that the right person remove a malignancy for ovarian cancer. It can be ruptured. It can spread to other parts of the body if it's not removed properly. So a gynecologic oncologist really should do those surgeries whenever possible. So that test is used for surgical triage. And our most recent addition to the portfolio called OvaWatch is used for initial clinical assessment. What we're really hoping to do there is provide, you know, a basis for making a really important decision about whether to have surgery, who should do the surgery, what kind of surgery you ought to have based on data. And so, you know, we like to say facts instead of fear. That's really important to us.
That's great. And thank you for that background. Very helpful. You know, so there's been, you know, a lot of news recently around the discussion of ovarian cancer funding. As you spoke to already, maybe you could chat a little bit with us on the funding of ovarian cancer research at the macro level, then take a look at maybe the DOD state, some biomarker legislation, sure. ARPA-H, really.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot happening actually, which is great. As a company, we've been committed to advocating not only for patients, but also for additional focus, investment and research for women's health, which is, I think we can all agree, has been very underfunded for many, many years. So it's great to see all of these prior efforts of Aspira and other companies that have taken the lead in advocacy groups, resulting in some attention and, more importantly, some dollars. As you mentioned, there was the Biden administration announced Women's Health Initiative that it resulted in about $100 million being allocated to women's health research. The ARPA-H is the agency that's overseeing the granting and the spending of those grants. There's a number of them that, including a whole thread related specifically to ovarian health, which is very exciting. There's a couple different levels of that. There's some for early stage SPARC ideas and others for what they call launch pad. And I think our tests really are, the enhancement of our test would be in that launch pad sort of bucket as well. We also saw the Department of Defense just recently release funding opportunities specifically for ovarian cancer. Our company was actually founded, or our initial technology was funded by a DOD grant. So, you know, we have a history of being able to successfully take advantage of that. So it's great to see that. We're also seeing at the state level, there's quite a bit of activity in biomarker legislation. What I mean by that is it's not specific to ovarian cancer, but a lot of states have become a little bit frustrated in the payer resistance to paying for biomarker testing that can really have a significant impact on earlier diagnosis and long-term survival rates. So legislation has been passed in a number of states to sort of force the hand of payers to fund and pay for biomarker testing, like our testing for ovarian cancer, but most of them are actually broader than that. So we're excited about that as well.
Nicole, how does Aspira's technology aim to transform women's gynecological health?
Yeah, so, you know, women's gynecologic disease is not only a very ignored, largely ignored area of diagnostic research and funding, it's also a real challenge, partially because the symptoms that a woman will experience for lots of different kinds of gynecologic diseases are exactly the same. So it makes it really challenging for doctors to know, you know, a woman comes in, she's complaining of heavy periods and cramps and bloating, pelvic pain, you know, that can be any number of diseases. So it's a little bit of a detective. It's a lot of detective work. I shouldn't say a little bit. It's a lot of detective work. One of the gynecologists that serves on our clinical advisory board told me that, you know, it's process of elimination more than anything else. So, you know, you have to first eliminate a bunch of stuff before you kind of come to a conclusion of what you're dealing with. So it's been very difficult. Our goal is to use AI-powered algorithms based on almost 30 years of research and experience at this stage to identify gynecologic disease using a simple blood test. So, you know, that's really the goal. We started with ovarian cancer, but we believe that the technology will work very well with other gynecologic diseases.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And if we take a step back and look at, you know, the competitive landscape here, where are your competitors in their current development?
Yeah, so they're the only major alternative to our ovarian cancer test is a test called CA125 that was developed back in the 70s. It's really been approved only for recurrence monitoring. It's a single biomarker test. It's offered, you know, pretty broadly, but it doesn't really do a great job in predicting malignancy for adnexal masses in initial disease. So in other words, it's used for recurrence monitoring because some of the other reasons why your CA125 level would be elevated are unlikely to be present if you are monitoring for recurrence, pregnancy, endometriosis, other things that have probably already been ruled out in a woman who has had surgery for ovarian cancer. But if you're using that as a sort of screening test or an adnexal mass assessment test, you can't really distinguish between a woman whose CA125 is elevated because of pregnancy or another benign condition and ovarian cancer. So it's not great. There are a number of really promising technologies, including diagnostic tests in development for ovarian cancer. And, you know, you'll never find me rooting against anyone who's trying to kill this disease. Right. But unfortunately, they are pretty early stage. I think we have the only commercially available test, and our pipeline has an enhancement to our existing technology that's also much further along than what's out in the landscape.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. It's been 45 years and there's been nothing else really available. It's a shame, and it's great that you guys are in the market too. You guys are the solution, which is great.
Right. Well, you know, the technology that Aspira developed for the test was actually licensed from Johns Hopkins University. And that's formed the basis. It's pretty advanced stuff. We're seeing more companies using it now, but we're talking about a test that was launched in 2013 for the first time, very, very ahead of its time. So, you know, one of the challenges has been, you know, driving a diagnostic tool into the market with doctors that they really aren't familiar with the technology. So we've had to break a lot of really new ground with gynecologists. But frankly, once they understand the purpose of the test, which is not to say, yes, this woman has cancer, or no, this woman does not. That's not the purpose of the test. You're never really, I shouldn't say never, it's gonna be really hard to get to that point with ovarian cancer, because in the earlier stages, it's extremely well contained. You're not going to find it in the bloodstream, and you're also not going to be able to tell the difference between a benign mass and a malignancy by ultrasound alone in your sort of average ultrasound environment, right? So, you know, it's tricky, but it's not impossible, and we've certainly proven that. Over 200,000 tests actually have been run at this point. So we're really proud of that milestone. We hit that just this year.
Okay. And what are the biggest challenges facing you as a CEO of Aspira, and how are you addressing them?
Yeah. So I think the biggest challenge is not inconsistent with other companies like Aspira with innovative technology and limited resources. You know, it's great to see the additional funding going to research in women's health. I hope that ultimately we also turn our attention to the other sort of systemic issues that we have in successful adoption for new technologies. So, you know, we have to incentivize clinicians to try new technologies, but more importantly, really, we have to demand that payers pay for new technologies. Frankly, it's, you know, very difficult to navigate a payer system with, you know, dozens and dozens of different payers, all with ever so slightly requirements for coverage. Some let you talk to them, some don't. It's very time consuming, and you almost have to be, you know, you have to be pretty darn persistent, let's say. We've had great progress, even in the last year, especially. We've seen some momentum building, but that's a really tough thing to manage. In terms of driving adoption by physicians, that I would say is another really important priority for us. I don't know if I'd call it a challenge so much as just number one priority, let's say. The challenge comes with during COVID, doctors obviously shut the door and didn't let reps in. Very understandably, the doctors that we sell to see vulnerable patients, pregnant women, women with potential cancer diagnoses. So it was appropriate for that door to close, but what they found is they really liked not having reps around. So they've been much more discriminating about who they will meet with. So that has now, and that actually has been good for us because our technology is so unique and so interesting that over time, we've actually been able to get that access again. Now we're really trying to drive a whole new protocol around mass management, from sort of surgery as a first resort to surgery when it's appropriate. I may not have mentioned that not only is early diagnosis of ovarian cancer really, really important and part of what we're focused on, we're also trying to eliminate the removal of healthy ovaries when there's a benign mass present. You know, there may be other reasons to remove the ovaries for a benign mass, symptomatic reasons, others. But for the vast majority of benign masses, that is a surgery that maybe could be avoided or deferred.
Speaking of early diagnosis, I'm a huge fan of a guy by the name of Dr. Peter Attia, who's the longevity guru in the U.S. right now.
Right.
And he speaks to that being one of the greatest flaws in the U.S. healthcare system is they wait until something as, shall we say, advanced in the body before they even address it. Do you envision a day when this is used much more frequently with younger women rather than waiting till someone comes in with a specific complaint?
Well, most women, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but it is a very significant majority of women who are diagnosed with ovarian cancer say that they did have symptoms before. And based on the research so far, it appears that they had symptoms far enough in advance that there should have been a red flag raised much, much earlier, right? So I think the number one priority is for women to take control of their health that way, meaning if you know something is wrong with your body, insist on having some additional workup done, including if you have a mass, including asking about a test, our test. And that's true for all women's health products. So I do think we're seeing a real change. I met with someone a couple weeks ago who said, I didn't know anything about this. I have daughters, I have a wife, I have a mother. I never knew any of this. And he said, why is that? And I said, well, this is probably the first time ever that you and I don't know you, you're a man, I'm a woman, we can sit in a room and talk about ovaries and talk about reproductive health. And that's normalized. That wasn't the case for my mother's generation. And it certainly wasn't the case for my grandmother's generation. So we had to first break down the stigma about talking about things like menstrual cycles and ovaries with men and women who don't know each other. That was really important. And I think that's a big help for new technologies like ours.
Especially with the two guys on the phone today, right? It's something where we're with you.
I mean, I have to say, most of my large investors are men, and they've been with the company and they've held in there for a long time. They've been great supporters all along. When I get to introduce someone to the company and talk about what we're doing, I can tell you that I feel a little bit like I'm giving the secrets of the world to them, because this is something that they really just didn't have a lot of visibility into. So, right. It's really been it's been a lesson in advocacy as much as anything else.
Right, right. So, kind of brings me back to how does your team stay up to date with the latest technology in the healthcare sector? How do you, integrate those technologies into your products and maximize outcomes?
Yeah. Well, so, we're in the enviable position now where people who have innovations in gynecologic disease diagnosis come to us, because we are, the model for successful launch of a commercial product, successful driving adoption. Even through COVID, we drove adoption. We have a lot left to do. I'm not claiming victory, but we are among the most successful in creating and launching and driving commercially a diagnostic for women's gynecologic disease. So for example, Dana-Farber, when they were looking for a partner to commercialize the microRNA technology that they had developed in some research, they came to us and said, we believe that of all the potential partners out there, you are the most likely to be able to finish this and launch it and drive it commercially and have doctors adopt it. So that's really, it's been wonderful to have that opportunity to be the leader. So people come to you. Beyond that, I mean, there's just so much happening. You've got to be on top of the news every single day, which I'm sure is not a big surprise to you.
So, Nicole, being an innovator yourself, how do you drive innovation at the firm?
Well, this is a lesson I learned a long time ago when I was in professional services. You have to be able to create an environment where people can come forward with ideas and problems. I think the thing I hate to hear the most, if you're trying to drive innovation or an innovation culture, that phrase that people sometimes use, don't come to me with problems, come to me with solutions, that should never be in your vocabulary at all. You should never say anything like that if you're trying to create innovation. What you should say is, come to me as soon as you have a problem, because as a team, we're much more likely to be able to, develop a solution. And I'm using it problem, but the same is true when you're trying to innovate new anything. You don't want people sitting in their silos and sitting, on their own trying to solve for doing the kinds of really revolutionary science that we're doing. It's collaboration its openness, its willingness to ask questions, you know, to look like the dummy in the room. That's what it's all about.
And what are the chief drivers in trying to maintain your competitive advantage?
Well, again, scanning the landscape for technology, of course, is really important. And that's probably number one priority. We're always looking for partners, commercial, scientific, development, and otherwise, you know, and just trying to stay ahead of the game and ahead of everyone else.
Nicole, just kind of off the top of the head question for you. So I've been reading a lot of fairly disturbing articles, the Wall Street Journal, et cetera, just even in the last 90 days, that there's been a massive uptick in cancer diagnoses in young women. Everyone's scratching their heads as a plastics, you know, fill in the blank and what it could potentially be. I would think that the market for these products will continue to just significantly increase just based on the stories I'm reading.
Yeah. True? Yeah. Well, I was reading today, the World Ovarian Cancer Coalition is probably the organization that tracks ovarian cancer globally more than anyone else. And they just released their annual briefing. And in there, they showed yet again, ovarian cancer diagnoses around the world are increasing, and they're projecting a major increase over the next, you know, however many decades. I think they were projecting out to 2050 to continue to see increases in ovarian cancers. Deeply, deeply disturbing. So, you know, gynecologists have to be willing to open their minds to new technologies, put new tools in the toolbox, and women have to be willing to push, advocate for themselves, and demand that, you know, new tools and new technologies are used.
And then just one other question by way of an analogy. So I have a concierge doctor at Northwestern University right down the street from me. And he had me take a GRAIL test during my last physical. I had to pay for it. But is the price point of your product or products low enough that we might reach a point where doctors will be telling women, or OBs will be telling their patients every year, you should really do this every 12 or 24 months, just out of an abundance of caution?
Yeah, well, so very important to keep in mind, our test is not a screen. Our test is for symptomatic patients, meaning women have been diagnosed with an adnexal mass. And that is important for a business perspective. It's important because we are able to tie it to a specific symptomatic patient. Mm-hmm. That increases the likelihood that we can get insurance coverage. So we do have Medicare coverage for all of our tests at about $897 per test. Mm-hmm. We have a variety of commercial payers as well. So, you know, I lamented about the challenges in getting coverage, but I probably should mention first that we've done actually a really great job getting coverage for our tests as well. And our test, if a woman does not have insurance, we charge $295 for the test. So it's a pretty low price point. But to answer the direct question, this is not meant to be a screening tool. I'm excited about some of the new technologies in cancer screening and even multi-cancer screening. I think it's going to be a real uphill battle to get coverage, insurance coverage.
Okay, very well.
I got it. So yeah, thanks for the call. This has been wonderful and good questions, Sam. I appreciate that. You know, thank you again. Our producers of the podcast are Nick Ford and Mohammed Dabdoud, and thanks to Mohammed for editing as well. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, and see you next week for another edition of the Water Tower Hour podcast.
The views expressed in this podcast may not necessarily reflect the views of Water Tower Research, LLC, aka WTR, and are provided for informational purposes only. The Water Tower Hour may not be distributed or reproduced without written consent of Water Tower Research and should not be considered research nor recommendation. WTR is an investor relations firm, not a licensed broker, broker-dealer, market maker, investment bank, underwriter, or investment advisor. Additional disclaimers can be found at watertowerresearch.com.